One of the great things that I get to do as a priest is weddings. Weddings are a lot of fun. There's a lot of romance and anticipation. I've actually had very, very few bridezillas over the course of my doing weddings. I've actually seen more momzillas than bridezillas, but that's another issue. But it's wonderful to get that view inside people's lives, and they kind of open to you in a way that doesn't happen in other settings. So I find it really wonderful that Jesus' first miracle is at a wedding, that he chose a wedding, even when he wasn't really quite ready, apparently, to begin to reveal himself. He was coaxed along at a wedding. Apparently, he believed that a wedding should be a celebration. It should be a cause for a party. And he wanted to carry on the party. Remember that no doubt at this point, the weddings typically lasted a week, especially if it was a wealthy family, and this was clearly a wealthy family because they had the 6 stone jars for the purification rites. You'd only have that in a house of significant wealth. So the wedding would probably have lasted a whole week, and it was into several days in that they ran out of the wine. Now this is actually the first thing that happened after the calling of Jesus' disciples, which was at the end of chapter 1. And it begins to show us who Jesus is. It's John's beginning to reveal to us the life and work of Jesus. And that's why we get it in the season of Epiphany. Last Sunday we had his baptism. Today it's his first miracle. It's actually the beginning of an arc of 7 miracles, or as John calls them, signs, about that reveal who Jesus is. John is very consistent. He doesn't use the term miracle. He calls them signs. Because for John, it's not about the thing itself. It's not that he really cares that much about this wedding or this wine, but rather it's about what it points to. After all, that's what a sign does. You know, and when they put up a billboard on the interstate, it's not that anybody cares about the billboard. It's about what the billboard is pointing us to. And it's the same thing here, that this is really about what it points us to about Jesus. And there's an arc of 7 signs that John tells us about. This first one, the water into wine at a wedding, some healings, the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus walking on the water, the healing of the man born blind. And then finally, it culminates in the 7th sign, which is the raising of Lazarus. And so he begins with what we might think of as a relatively simple sign that points to Jesus' authority over the substance of creation. And it works through Jesus' authority over the wind and the waves, over water, over sickness, and finally, over death itself in the raising of Lazarus. Now, the story of the water being turned into wine, there's so many levels to it. I could preach on this for a month. I won't, but I could. There's so many different things. But what I want to do today is just kind of skip through and make a few observations about things that we can see in this passage. The first thing I want us to notice is that the creator of the universe listened to his mother. He was coaxed by the interactions that he had right then and there. Now, the phrasing is admittedly difficult. And if you read the commentaries, you'll read lots and lots of stuff that is said about Jesus' response to his mother, to Mary. She's actually never named in the Gospel of John. She's just referred to as the mother of Jesus. But she says to him, they have no wine. Now, I wish we could tell if that was kind of a, they have no wine, can you believe that? Or, they have no wine, what are you going to do about it? You know, we don't really know what the tone was. There's no emojis in the Greek to tell us. But he then replies, as it's translated here, woman, what concern is that to you and to me? I think the translation loses a little something. And if you evaluate the Greek, and remember, of course, Jesus would have said this in Aramaic. What we have written down is in Greek, so it's already been translated once. But I think a better translation would be ma'am. And I don't mean ma'am in the distancing way. I mean ma'am in the southern kind of friendly, mildly affectionate, but acknowledging your authority kind of way. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. That sort of thing. I think that's really a better way to hear what Jesus is saying. And then the next phrase, literally, the translation is, what to you to me? The Greek is rather sparse there. It's an idiomatic phrase. And it probably means pretty much the way it's translated here. How is that of concern to you or to me? What do we have to do with this? It's not our wedding. We're not responsible. We're not the stewards. We're not putting on the show here. This isn't our problem. But then he adds another phrase, which has all kinds of meaning to it. He says, my hour has not yet come. Now, for those who heard it at that moment, that probably had very little meaning. This is one of those phrases that would have been understood later as they reflect back on it. John consistently throughout his gospel speaks of Jesus' hour as the hour of his crucifixion and then the subsequent resurrection. That's the hour as John talks about it throughout his gospel. And so what we find here, what John is telling us by remembering this part of Jesus' response is that Jesus knew at this moment that he was there for a reason. He was called for a specific purpose, a specific season, a specific time, and that was coming. And he knew it was coming. And he embarked on that road. In fact, he decided to begin to pull up, to pull back the blinds, to pull back the curtain just a little bit here at this wedding and begin to show that path that was going to go to his hour, to ultimately his death and resurrection. I have, on a number of occasions, gotten myself into things where I thought halfway through, why did I start into this? And wishing, you know, I had maybe just didn't do it or paid somebody to do it or whatever. But you get halfway in and then you're kind of stuck. And so sometimes I wonder if Jesus had known what was coming, would he have started into it? Would he have perhaps thought again? And the truth is, he knew what was coming. That's what John is letting us know here. Jesus knew at the very beginning, before the hour came, he knew that the hour was coming and that's where all this was going to go. And so the answer is yes. Even knowing what would come, Jesus embarked on this road for us, for you and for me. And we see that right from the very beginning. John wants us to be very clear about that. Jesus knew what he was getting into, and he decided that we are worth it. You and I are worth it to him. So Jesus proceeds to turn the water into wine, and not just any old wine, not just the Mad Dog 2020 or the Boone's Farm, but the good stuff. I'm going back to my high school and college days. He turned it into the good stuff. And he didn't just make a little bit. six jars, 20 to 30 gallons each. That's 120 to 180 gallons of wine. It's a sign of abundance. It's a sign that the blessings that God brings to us are more than we can ask for or imagine. If somebody had asked, it probably would have been, oh, just a couple of jugs, just a little bit, you know, just extend it out a little bit further, is all they would have asked for. But he turned the water into wine so that many could know the blessing of his presence. Notice that Jesus didn't just arrive there deciding, gee, you know, if I turn some water into wine, that's going to be a really impressive trick. And I'll bet I get a bunch of followers if I do that. No, the sign comes as a response to a need. A response to just a basic human need. And in truth, if you look through all the miracles and the signs as they are in John and in Matthew and Mark and Luke, they are all in response to a basic human need that comes to him for healing, for companionship, for life, for all kinds of things. But all of them are in response to a basic human need. And his call to us is the same, to learn from that example. Our call is not to figure out some stuff that makes the church look cool, but to meet human needs, to meet the needs that people have. I saw a wonderful quote this week. I put it out on the church's Facebook page from a guy named Thomas Merton, who was a Catholic monk and a mystic and did a lot of writing. His most famous book is called The Seven Story Mountain. Wonderful book about the contemplative mystic path of Christian faith. But he said this. He said, our job is to love others without stopping to inquire whether or not they are worthy. I'm going to say that again. Our job is to love others without stopping to inquire whether they are worthy. Jesus didn't stop and evaluate, is this bridegroom a good guy? Was he responsible in having enough wine? Did something odd happen, or was he just being irresponsible about this? He didn't ask those questions. He didn't ask what all the people were doing with the wine at the party. He simply encountered a need and met the need out of his love for the people that were gathered around. That is our calling as well, to simply work to meet the needs that God places before us. Now, let me add an aside here, and that is to deal with another concern that comes up with this passage, and that is alcohol abuse and alcoholism. I understand very well that alcohol is often abused, and it's a big problem in our culture, in our society, and not just ours, but in fact around the world. And in fact, even in Jesus' day, I'm sure there were plenty of what we might call drunkards or winos or whatever, people who just tried to get enough alcohol to keep themselves drunk all the time. I'm sure that was nothing new, and they were well familiar with it, even if they didn't have a disease and treatment centers and all that kind of understanding of it. But here's what I want us to remember. All of God's gifts to us come to us with the potential for abuse. All of his gifts can be misused. Alcohol is one. Food is another, for example. He gives us this gift of food, and obesity is epidemic in America. And the damage that we do to ourselves by our eating habits is huge. He gives us the gift of sexuality. And how many ways do we abuse and misuse that gift? He gives us the gift of a brain and the ability to be creative and thoughtful and intelligent. And yet sometimes we use that for horrid and evil and terrible ends that bring about all kinds of suffering. All of the gifts that God brings to us come with the potential for abuse. And our responsibility in receiving those gifts is to make sure that we use them as He intended, that we keep them within the bounds for which they were designed. That includes food, alcohol, sexuality, our intellects, our physical abilities, the things we can do with our hands and so forth, all of those different things. It is our responsibility to receive those gifts in gratitude and then use them as He intended in order to avoid the potential for the misuse of those things. But the center of this text, really, with all those different observations, the center of the text comes at the end. Jesus did this, the first of His signs, in Cana of Galilee, and revealed His glory. He's beginning the process of revealing His nature, what John refers to as His glory, that this is the God of the universe who has come to be among us as one of us. And He's beginning the process of showing us that. And that's really why John includes it here. That's why John tells us about this miracle, is so that we can begin to see a little bit of who this person Jesus is, that He has authority over the substance of creation. We'll see other things come along later, His authority over disease and sickness and birth defects and finally even death. This one is just a relatively simple one. The Creator of the universe comes to us. The one who has authority over the very stuff of creation comes to meet our need, comes to love us. And at first it's just a simple little need for something to drink at a wedding. And as we move along, it's our need for wholeness, our need for health, our need for life itself, our need for forgiveness and grace. All of those are things that He brings to us by coming to us. Such is His love for you and for me. Amen.